What is XDR? Why do I need it?
We want to call ourselves an XDR company. We call ourselves more of a beyond XDR. Back in 2017, when I started the company, we started with the belief that the data points that we're collecting from different sources on the network were not enough. That comes from a 23 plus years of experience in the industry, having led SOCs for multiple international companies, Fortune 10s and Fortune 100s. So I came back and said, no, we need to look at this problem in a unified platform. Essentially, we need to look at what's happening on the endpoint, what's happening on the network, what's happening in the data center, what's happening at the ingress egress, whether it is your cloud environments or your data centers, and then correlate all that information and only then be able to judge whether something is actually an attack or a false positive. Otherwise, the context is completely missing. There was this big hue and cry about EDRs, and EDRs become extremely popular. Carbon Black really rode that wave all the way to the bank. And based on that, they said, okay, you know what? We've hit the limit and ceiling on what you can collect at endpoint. We need more data because endpoints can lie. Because if I have compromised an endpoint, which is your laptop, desktop, server, virtual machine, be whatever computing device it is, I can make the system lie to you. So they said, okay, fine, we need more data points. And where are those data points coming from? Obviously, other tools and other things on the network that exist. Now, they're saying XDR, they're calling it XDR. XDR is more like extended detection and response. What used to be endpoint detection and response became an extended detection and response. We've been doing it all along, and we're very hyper-focused on cyber resiliency, improving cyber resilience in organizations where we look at the capability to detect something reliably and respond and remediate to it very fast. And that's why we call it more of a beyond XDR than just an XDR, which is just catching fire now.
Okay. What is your platform? Is it a SIM? And then you provide the analysts that are doing the hunting or monitoring the alerting and doing the remediation?
Essentially, when you look at cybersecurity from a defense perspective, right? You're talking about your firewalls, your proxies, your email gateways, your antivirus systems. Those essentially form the basic security defense stack. Now, if you go beyond that and say, what is beyond that, right? I mean, I know all of these, and the attackers today are easily able to get past all of this. It's very clear. We're seeing these media outlets reporting attacks every day now, right? Beyond that you go, then you start looking at what we call an advanced cyber defense stack, where you're really looking at behavior anomalies, either on the endpoint or on the network, trying to understand the anomalies that happen on the network side, way opposed from signal intelligence perspective, understand process behaviors, understand user behaviors, and then try to make sense of what is happening. And on top of that, figure out how do you want to respond and remediate one of these activities. So if there is an incident happening, how do you respond to that incident? Like, for example, I want to say, collect more data on the incident, or I want to perform a trigger. I want to actually go back and say, please suspend the process. Don't do anything because I think it's bad. Suspend it. I'll go back later and collect my data. The many types of response. I want to quarantine the endpoint. And, you know, in organizations, quarantining an endpoint is not very easy because of the large expanse of most of these organizations running into thousands of endpoints, and especially today with the remote workforce that is actually in play. If I want to quarantine your laptop and you're part of my organization, that's not as easy as it sounds anymore, because you run on your own infrastructure. You don't run on my infrastructure. This creates problems, right? We figured out how to solve those and then move on to what we call threat hunting, which is at the top of the stack.
How are you solving those problems?
Oh, we'll come back to that in just a second. So in that stack, in the advanced cyber defense stack, the top piece is usually threat hunting. Essentially, it is figuring out what could be happening and trying to go solve those problems before they actually become major issues. Oh, you probably received threat intelligence from CERT US or CERT IN or wherever you are, and probably industry vertical. They're supporting threat intelligence and giving you and saying there are particular artifacts a attacker is reporting or behavior is doing. And if you guide search for those artifacts and you find them, that means the attacker is on the network, or it could be a hypothesis. Essentially, you say, okay, I want to disprove the fact that my company is leaking data. How do you do that? You start about looking for uploads of data. What kind of uploads can I find? Who is doing that? And try to narrow it down. If you don't find anything, great. If you find something, then you have a coin to actually go. Right? That's the advanced cyber defense stack. Because today's attackers very rarely drop malware. They are attacking you from the inside, which means they're either phishing for your credential, getting into your net, acting as one of you, stealing credentials while they are inside. And everything they do is using the system tools that are already present in every one of their operating systems, be it Mac, be it Linux, be it Windows, right? So it becomes very hard.
But Macs don't get viruses. What are you talking
about? So viruses are what we call, the lowest common denominator among attacks, malware, right? It is usually the spit kiddies who are after these things. Often, most of the times, it is the actual sophisticated attacker after he has taken and stolen data to erase all his tracks. He is leaving a ransomware on your net. So nothing becomes recoverable and the forensics become waste, right? So that advanced cyber defense stack is where player attackers are playing. And as defenders, we need to play in that game. That is what Blue Sofa is. The entire stack, instead of providing piecemeal based, like today you could probably use 6-7 different tools to do what Blue Sofa does. But having built it as a unified stack, we have the integration that can cleanly show you from point A to point B and draw a complete storyline for you in seconds, which usually in today's security operations center takes hours or days. Mm-hmm. So how do you solve that response problem? We have an agent list, okay. Right? And it's one of the most mature today. In December, we've even open sourced the framework. We call it a framework because though it solves a lot of problems, there may be problems that we have not thought of, and we want others to actually contribute. And we built it on a flexible framework, so it can be extensible by itself without requiring too many techniques. So we open sourced it in December 21st. Now we're seeing a lot of response from organizations who do risk management, who want to use our framework to go ahead and take remediation actions. So in Windows, we obviously use RMI or WMI to connect, WinRM and WMI to connect to remote systems. And Linux, obviously, we use SSH. Mac, we are not really seeing that much of a requirement on the other side, but we are getting there slowly after we finish up. So that agentless system, which means I don't have to be present on your system for me to take action. I can still do it remotely, just like an attacker does, except that we're doing it for defense. It's one of the most mature frameworks today, has over 272 plus capabilities that it can look for and do for you, and more coming in from the open source community.
Now, you were saying earlier that a lot of it is behavioral based. Is there an audit timeframe that you have to run on the client systems to really understand how they operate before you can really become effective?
Yes and no.
In terms of understanding their behavior and knowing the difference between them and a bad actor and or an insider threat?
Yes and no. In most organizations, most vendors today use what we call unsupervised learning algorithms, right? Everybody talks about AI, right? Unsupervised learning algorithms really need you to baseline the environment before they can actually deliver any amount of value. And the challenge with that is that everybody's baseline is different. And if the malware is already on the net, there is an opportunity for you to baseline the malware behavior and take that as a baseline and completely sideline any anomalies that may be generating inside the net. So we moved away. Early on, we decided that we're going to move away from those models and look more from a behavior perspective. And when we started in 2017, we didn't have the NIST initiative of MITRE attack framework, attack metrics. Luckily today, for most vendors, everybody has access to the MITRE attack matrix. Now, what is this matrix? It is a combination of all the techniques and tactics an attacker can use to compromise your network. How he accomplishes each of these techniques can be in finite ways. But it is broken down into, okay, these are the different techniques he can use to get into your network, and these are the different behaviors he could show. Back when we started, we didn't have that luxury, and we painfully built our version of it. But now we also map against the MITRE attack. So it's about 280 plus techniques in all that an attacker has to exhibit some way, shape, or form, and we go after those behaviors. Instead of trying to look for what How is it trying to achieve each of these? We don't worry about that. We just go by people.
Now, are you guys installing any type of network tap, network telemetry, or?
I like that question because we have an option of installing and working off a network tap. We call that our sensor. The sensor looks at all incoming and outgoing traffic, and it could also look at all the east and west traffic and pick up anomalies. But the idea is that we want to build anomalous behavior and try to understand. A simple example would be when you're normally browsing the internet, your data coming in is more than your data going out on each machine. That's normal behavior. If you're uploading too much data than receiving, that means you're actually uploading data out, which means data is going out of. That's very unusual behavior for a normal workstation. It is probably a normal behavior for an FTP server or an SFTP server. Nobody uses FTP anymore. SFTP server or SSH-based server that you're allowing people and providing a service on. But for every other system on the network, that is an anomalous behavior. Most of the times, people are getting data. They're not actually uploading data. So that is one of the signals you could look for, right? As an anomaly. But that's just a very basic example, right? And these kind of, and mapping that data with also the threat intelligence that we collect from over, today I think we collect from over 102 sources, deduplicate that data, validate it, and then match it against all of the data that's going in and out.
What type of data retention are you guys offering with your platform? I know you have three different levels.
Oh yeah, we have three different levels, but from a data retention perspective, all of them by default are 45 days. Since we are a SaaS platform, we're limited by how much storage, but today, end of this month, we are ready to announce a unlimited data storage model where we can search and query unlimited amount of data. Though 45 days of data is online, you can still go back 1 year and search for it without having to retrieve it. Majority of the people who provide services as SaaS today, they only provide 15 or 30 days that itself. And if you want older data, they have to restore it. So we're walking away from that restoration model. You can directly query data at rest in purpose.
How does that go against most compliance regimes that ask you to hold data for ungodly lengths of time that really make no sense?
Yes, we...
Just to qualify that statement, I am not a fan of most compliance regimes. I think they're just checkbox exercises and don't actually do anything to improve security.
Security is not improved by compliance. Security is improved by intention. So you have to intentionally move forward during yourself. You're very right. Absolutely correct. What compliance is trying to do is get the information security teams the power they need to, and the budgets they need to actually get things done, at least the basic level of security. So in that regard, compliance is actually useful in securing budgets. But other than that, budgets are compliance by itself. Being compliant by itself is nice.
It's a money-making exercise. I have a question for you, and this is something I think you're probably more apt to answer. When COVID came around, everyone started talking about, let's protect the identity. And they said, we don't need to protect the perimeter anymore. We don't need to protect the device as long as you use an IDP like 365, Okta, or any of the other guys. What are your thoughts on that? And what type of data or telemetry are you losing by not having a tap on a network? Because, you know, I'm working from home. I call this my global headquarters. You're probably working from home at least some part of the time, as are millions of other people.
So the network tap is just one source of data we look at. We look at a whole host of other telemetry information, the endpoints themselves, the servers, data centers, any other tools, any other equipment you use inside. But coming back to your question about identity, I think validating identity is actually a very good exercise, but that by itself does not provide you. It's just one step of the game where you're actually trying to say, hey, you know what? 90% of my workforce is working remotely. I need to confirm that the person who is logging in as Shiva is actually, right? And there, that's where the identity management is coming in and ensuring that. On a larger scale, identity also, IAM tools also expand their reach into managing access to resources on an organization network. that usually takes a backseat very, very fast because access control lists by themselves are extremely complicated in enterprises. Majority of these times, these exercises stop and provide a lot of value at the identity detection piece itself. And they're very good. And they talk about perimeter being dead. Hey, you're just moving your perimeter. I know you widened your perimeter rather than saying your perimeter is not dead. Your data center is still like this. It probably exists in the cloud, in a VPC. It's still your VPC. You still need to understand what's going in and out of it. You're protecting it just like you're protecting. The only changes are when you're using the serverless model, right? You're probably using an application, not an entire infrastructure. Those are the places where, you know, the perimeter probably is dead, but you still want some level of information based on what you're using. And I think the cloud providers are working very hard to provide you specific logs to your instance of activity that is happening. Now, there have been a lot of discussions on how you can actually attack a serverless computing environment and then write that to gain access into your infrastructure. We have not seen any practical attacks as of date. That still largely remains theory. Majority of the times, primarily because of the short duration of time the serverless computes are available, and very specific tasks are designed rather than standing up an infrastructure instance like a VM, which could do a lot.
How are you guys deploying on all these computers if you have an agentless framework?
So we're not deploying. That's the beauty of it. So we're able to access them based on some credentials that we look for, and then interrogate them, and then find their current state, which is what more observability is a new term that's making the rounds today. But essentially, we're trying to understand what is happening from a signal intelligence perspective, communications, constantly interrogating the system, getting the data we need. And if possible, we can also put an agent if they want to provide more information. But we can get all the data we need without using an agent.
But how are you getting that data without an agent?
So without agent, we're interrogating these endpoints and collecting those data points. And if you're using a serverless compute and others, like in AWS, you get the data outbound and you can consume that data from that side.
Okay, so you're just leveraging API into the SaaS?
Yes.
Okay. Do you find there's a, let's use Microsoft 365 as the example, because a lot of companies are lifting and shifting or doing some form of hybrid Azure AD deployment. Now they have a SLA that they have up to 24 hours to generate a log. Has that presented any issues for you guys?
Usually recommend that clients have some other backup way of providing the data to us if they're using instances. But if you're talking specifically about Office 365, they've come a long way. There's still downtimes where you don't receive logs, especially with the Graph Connect APIs. People have been struggling with it to get the right data. We do see data coming to us late. But more often than not, we also rely on the VPC flow models to provide us information on what's happening on the network and see if there are threat actors who are on the environment actively using it without showing their presence. Now, it provides a challenge when you're using something more of a service, like in Office 365, where you're completely reliant on the cloud provider to provide data to you. That presents its own set of challenges. Today, as of today, there are really no easy answers. But if you actually are hosting your infrastructure on Azure, then there are much better ways of getting this data.
What does your ideal client and deployment look like? Meaning, what type of infrastructure would you like to see your clients have, and then how do you plug into that?
We are specifically targeting the mid-market segment. And when we say mid-tier markets, we're talking about anywhere between 100 million to 6 to 7 billion in revenue. That's the market segment we're really after. Most of these are either cloud-first companies or a hybrid cloud environment. We're seeing a lot of traction from precision manufacturing. And when I say precision, I'm more talking about manufacturing companies that are under direct compliance requirements from Department of Defense, Fed, so on. healthcare and tier two health financial companies are something we're seeing a lot of traction in today. They're moving, lifting and shifting a lot of their infrastructure into the cloud now. And we see tremendous opportunities there.
In terms of manufacturing, because I do have a good deal of manufacturing clients, and the biggest problem there are these legacy CNC machines that run software and hardware that's probably older than you and I combined. How does a product like yours or any good security product really have overwatch over something like that? Or is it just really a matter of segregating it from the network and controlling access as to what's going in and out to that VLAN or separation?
So we go back all the way up to working with Windows XP in terms of our agentless approach. And this is where our agentless approach actually shines, outshines everything else, especially in regulated environments, in pharma companies, manufacturing companies, where they cannot control any of the SCADA machines, or typically the CNC machines you're talking about are considered SCADA controllers. Those machines that post the SCADA controllers and so on and so forth, which are under manufacturer warranty, and they usually don't have any patches, they're very, very old. Our agentless mechanism actually helps with collecting the right data points that we need without having to install anything on the endpoint. At the same time, we look at the data that we collect from the sensors also, the tap, which we use to gain intelligence, correlate that information, and decide what action needs to be taken on that agent, on that endpoint. Since we're agentless, we can actually go in, take the action required. Case in point, one of our customers actually had a malware, very old one, opening up remote access. So we call it malware, but essentially the rest of the world knows it as TeamViewer. So installed on one of his machines that they were not even aware that is being controlled by someone else. They had no clue. Once we saw anomalous activity from places where this manufacturer was positive that they did not have any relationships with, we were able to go in, terminate those processes and remove those from the disk without having to install ourselves. All of this happened without actually having to install anything on that end. So that's where we shine. And one of the other major precision manufacturers is a very interesting story. Operating in France, there's a Chinese company that comes up and opens shop right next to it. This company, French company, manufactures defense contractor parts for United States. And China comes in, a Chinese company comes in and manufactures the same exact thing. And obviously they're suspecting a breach. So we go in and we put in our sensors, we put in our data, and then we start monitoring and start to see anomalies showing up. And when we investigate those anomalies, turns out the threat actor had so much information on this manufacturer. He knew exactly when a specific, a foreman would go into the guest network versus the carpet. That much information they have. So their malware would only act when he's on the guest network and would lay completely dormant. Wouldn't even do pings. It wouldn't even do any reconnaissance. It wouldn't even do command and control communication. Nothing when he comes back onto the carpet. Only when he's on the guest network, it would transmit out and use command and controls to communicate with whoever. But when it's back on the carpet network, it just would not. It would just lay dead. That was amazing when we saw that. And the level of information they already had, the amount of targeting they did to get the right data out was amazing. These are the things that that customer today is our one of our largest customers, and they're expanding in scope from 12,000 endpoints.
How were you and your team able to figure that out?
From the network traces we were able to collect, and looking at the activity that was actually happening from a process perspective on that endpoint, we were able to put two and two together. So essentially when we saw the previous tools, because it was guest network, they were letting all data out. But what we found out was while it was letting data out, there was some periodic communication happening only when that laptop was on the guest network, not when that device was actually on the corporate network. And we said, this is very odd. This kind of periodic activity usually looks like malware. because it's extremely small amount of communication because it's command and control. And we picked up command and control, and we knew it was command and control, but we were trying to understand why we're seeing it only in one place. Then we inquire. We realize that that is actually the guest network of that organ that is reserved for visitors. This foreman was just using it for his personal purposes.
The fact that they're using guest versus corporate network, that is a lot of human reconnaissance that they performed before they even injected anything.
It is amazing. It is amazing. We were flattered that they knew so much about the company before they even launched the attempt.
Do you guys see a lot of APT activity within your, I guess, if you're dealing with a defense client?
Let me put it this way. We do see a lot of APT, but if you're asking, do you see a lot of sophisticated APT? Well, I would say, you know what, majority of what goes for sophisticated APTs really are not that sophisticated. They're using one of the most basic attacks that we have known for over a decade, right? At least a decade. But these are so simple that it has escaped majority of their focus. People have not thought about
it. I look at sophistication as success. I look at sophistication as success on their part because they're just really good at drilling the basics. And that's what allows them to live off the land and be successful in what they're doing. So.
And that's where we actually shine in trying to understand who is actually trying to live off the land and why. An admin system doing something of that sort is also suspicious if he's trying to do things in very different ways. For example, somebody who has a security operations center, and you start noticing that they're using some of those live off the land binaries, or they're called LOL binaries, right? And we notice them using this time and again without specific purpose that actually correlates to an administrative task. We become extremely suspicious of this kind of activities.
How do you feel about RMMs like the Datto? So, now it's enabled. They got spun out from SolarWinds. Are you familiar with those platforms?
I'm familiar with them more on the data recovery side. I'm not sure they're doing anything else more actively in that space.
The reason I ask is because it's essentially command and control infrastructure that a managed service provider uses to make mass changes and administration of multiple clients across various geographic locations. And these are all platforms that I'm going to catch a lot of flack for this, but are lacking in the security area because they're old. They were built in a time where today's threats could not have been imagined or weren't imagined. And they're essentially trying to hide them behind a WAF to keep them protected. But once you get in, you have near unfettered access to thousands upon thousands of workstations and servers.
What you're saying could be said for most of the new generation tools out there too. And majority of the SaaS providers out there today that are coming out, what you're saying probably holds true for a lot of them. The pace of innovation, the pace of the technology advancement is so fast. It is really very hard for somebody to do a ground-up approach trying to build something and embed security. Everybody loves to talk about this. We have lived it ourselves and we have seen it in the market. It is an extremely hard challenge to manage the pace of innovation versus pace of release of features, not necessarily innovation most of the time, many times it's just trying to meet the demands of the market and also be secure at the same time. You have to lean on external tool factors like WAFs and the others. Now, are you going back and fixing things? I think that is more important, right? A WAF will only get you. What happened in the Kaseya ransomware was a classic decade-old technique of taking a box-traversal vulnerability that existed in Microsoft Defender very long ago, using that to compromise. And it just happened to be what got Kaseya, and that drilled back into almost everybody's systems. And it is amazing to see something that was patched probably a decade ago, and they bring the same binary back, replace the binary and execute, and almost every single EDR and XDR out there has been to detect.
question about EDR.
It was signed by Microsoft. There was never a problem with that. And majority of the EDRs today, if it is signed by Microsoft, they default trust. Right? And these are the challenges that we're trying to work around and focus more on behavior. We have a tool called Blue Armor. It is an endpoint tool that is specifically focused on preventing bad from happening. The reason I say bad, rather than say, hey, protects against malware, protects against ransomware, so on and so forth, is because all of that is bad behavior. And we're very, very behavior focused. And the proof is in the pudding. We have not updated it in the last 24 months. And just 6 months ago or 5 months ago, it prevented a brand new ransomware from executing at 104 clients. Never updated, never had to be patched. The only update we do it is from a usability of a perspective, nothing from a detection perspective. And it's completely behavior. And it's only 1 megabyte in memory. Show me any tool you use on your laptop today that
I can't think of any. That's definitely not Chrome.
We basically built this for the SCADA environment, and then we realized there's tremendous potential for it on the other side of the fence. So we're working closely on that. We're working with a close group of clients on that and trying to see how it performs amazingly well, because a majority of the organizations, if you're not a bleeding edge company, you're always struggling to patch. I talk about one of the largest IT providers in the world, Opposite. They were breached. Not because they did not have security. It's everybody lags behind the patching. Patching, if you're trying to run after the patch program and trying to make it efficient, you're going to fail. Because the vulnerabilities never stop coming.
You know, we patch workstations on a daily cycle. We hold them for X number of days. I wouldn't say publicly because I don't want anyone listening to know. But they're held for a certain number of days and tested to make sure that they're stable. And our patch window runs every day. So if it's approved today, it's going to run tomorrow morning.
Yep.
And servers are every week. I'd rather brick a computer than have a ransomware
attacked.
Take it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I'd really like to...
Shiva, I would throw this at you. When was the last time you heard a vulnerability being used to compromise a network encrypted it? Apache
Storm. When was the last... Well, I'm sorry?
When was the last time you heard of a major security incident happening because of a vulnerability that was publicly released?
Daily?
Apache Straps was the last one. A vulnerability that was publicly
released. I don't know.
Yeah. So post that, majority of the attacks have been insider. It was true credential phishing. And then going after is to compromise other services inside it.
Well, that's my next question for you. With your platform and everything you've told me up until now, the two things that really keep me up at night, which are completely out of my control as an IT services provider, are shadow IT and insider threats. And I look at shadow IT as a user not knowing better and giving persistence by accident, whereas an insider threat is it's a deliberate act that an employee or contractor is taking to bring bad in. How do you guys work with that? We'll work with those two.
So essentially, when we look at each of these, we look at them from a behavior perspective. Now, whether it is deliberate or it is unintentional or it is the malice is happening without your knowledge from your system. Could be in your office. Probably your credentials got phished or you clicked something, not you, somebody else using your system for a short period of time, clicked something, whatever the case. We're looking for changes in behavior that look like it. Irrespective of what an attacker does, he has to exhibit some behaviors. And those behaviors are what we're really razor sharp focused on. We're not really focused on whether it is originating from inside or outside, and we don't care one way or the other. Our job is to stop it. A lot of the industry seems to be very hung up on trying to understand, hey, is this a Russian attacker or a Chinese attacker? That comes next. And that will come next. And that's okay. The first thing you need to do is prevent bad things from happening. And that's the first thing we look at. Rather than trying to understand and mold our machine learning algorithms to understand the behaviors of multiple malware, CNC, so on and so forth. If you put a razor sharp focus on trying to just understand the behavior of an attacker has only a finite number of ways he can attack a system. And he has to exhibit his feathers at some point in time. Either when he's tearing your logs or whether he's trying to look for any present credentials in the memory. He has to look before he can actually capture them. Or he's trying to, because whenever he lands on a network or a system, he's like a guy landing in a dark pool without any perspective. He needs to feel it out and try to understand where he lands. And that's what most of the times gives it away. And the further steps, each of these tactics can be looked at in more detail. But I think that is the TED giveaway. Now, when you have a platform like ours, which looks at multiple data sources, I think that's what makes us provide a much stronger signal rather than just throw a false positive and say, hey, you know what? We saw a recon activity, or we saw a mass installation activity, or we saw communication to a known threat intelligence or something of that sort. We are able to correlate all that information. I saw a hit from a system that is known to be bad from the latest threat intel. Or I say I saw a hit on the system and then I saw it reach out, make a script-based decision to reach out to something outside your network, not via browser, not originate via browser. And then we saw something come back. And then that system did something else. Like it tried to actually look around itself and see who else was operating here, or looking for specific ports, looking for failed logins. It doesn't have to be five failed logins like the classic pieces. Even if it's a single failed login, attackers today are very patient, right? So we look for those kind of patterns, trying to map them together, which gives you a much stronger signal. We call those MITRE chains, but any vendor could bring up any name they want. But essentially, we're mapping across the belt and saying, okay, this now actually looks like an attack to me. It's not an isolated incident anymore. And this looks like an admin activity to me, but it is still unusual because he's using the tools that are really unusual for use on an admin activity, and somebody needs to take it. Like recently, there was a pen test, a customer did at their end without informing us, and we immediately bubbled things up to them and said, hey, you know what? This is doesn't look right to us, primarily because we have never seen these alerts go off in here. You told us these are okay for system A, B, and C. These are expected because you're using some custom software, which is okay. But we're seeing it on multiple systems now, and that's not okay. And lo and behold, they were actually connected. So.
But how many companies are actually aware of their assets and able to identify them and inventory them?
And that's where the network probe actually starts to bring value. It's not fair to expect people to know their assets. Majority of the times, not because they don't want it. Even with all bright intentions, like you mentioned, shadow IT and other things that come into play, every organization has, you know, business issue credit cards and nothing is stopping that. And majority of the times, people do it with a good intention that they want to actually take the business ball. But the primary purpose of business is to do business, not necessarily to collect the asset inventory. It just happens to be something they have to do as they move along, right? And it just happens. I mean, I've worked with Fortune 10 companies, Fortune 100, and much smaller organizations, like 700, 800 employees organizations also. It just is a sprawl that keeps happening over and over again. Mm-hmm. You're constantly playing catch-up. So your network probes there really deliver a lot. Tools like Cisco ISE that bring intelligence into kind of devices connected, which new devices are connected, which user is coming from, what kind of device, and should be allowed in. Those are actually, we integrate with Cisco ISE. One of the things, interesting things we do is when we see activity from non-standard user devices, then we treat that as a suspect. For example, Shiva always comes in from those laptop. I see him reporting a Linux system or trying to connect from one of the sensors, IoT devices or something else, then I will raise a alarm.
So why would a company go with you versus trying to build their own internally by connecting 1,000 different products that don't actually work well with each other?
So why does any company buy products instead of building it themselves? The majority of the IT organizations.
So they don't lose budget for next year?
Support becomes a major, right? I mean, and constantly keeping it up to date. And, you know, there's no bonded labor for the last 50 years. So people are free to move around. And the person who heads this, if they move around, they lose all intelligence of that product. And this has happened over and over again. And we get to see majority of this in most enterprise customers today, where over a period of time, they have so much legacy software that nobody knows how it even functions. Nobody knows where it even sits, what it talks to, and what access credentials it needs. It just works. That's all they can. And these are major challenges, right? I mean, if you ask me, I've been on the other side of the table for 24 plus years. And for me, this is more about reliability, constant updates, and support.
So you wanted to close out with?
No, I think that your questions were spot on. I love being on your show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And how can the people get in touch with you if you even want to hear from them?
We have a chatbot on our website, bluesapphire.com. You can also email me directly. I'm the CEO, and I do look at all my emails myself, Dylan@bluesapphire.com. If you want to reach for more information, info is a very good spot to get there, info@bluesapphire.com. We're active on Twitter, as Blues can tweet us, and we'll respond back. Our team will be constantly monitoring those things.